Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we talk about how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
And we also discuss why a plant-based diet is the healthiest for humans and the best thing one can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas. Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Victor and Carla Flores of the group Otero Veg, and they also work for Vegan Outreach in New Mexico. That's a little later on the show, but first some news.
The Center for Biological Diversity reports that wildlife officials have revealed that the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Wildlife Agency killed a Mexican gray wolf in eastern Arizona in August, the first time in more than 10 years that the government has killed one of these critically endangered animals because of livestock predation. The female, one of only a small number of Mexican wolves in the wild, was part of the Diamond Pack. Michael Robinson, conservation advocate with the Center for Biological Diversity, states that it's sickening that the Trump administration is so heartless that it would gun down Mexican wolves on behalf of the livestock industry. He adds that the Diamond Pack has needlessly lost a member of its family, and the recovery of the endangered Mexican gray wolves has taken an unnecessary step backwards. The killing represents a return to a discredited policy of killing wolves punitively in the same locations where sloppy livestock management practices typically draw wolves into conflicts. Along with the one-sentence summary of the wolf's killing released, it was revealed that a dead cow, found around the same time as other cattle that were killed by wolves, was necropsied and found not to have been killed by wolves, but instead to have died from ingesting twine. Those circumstances suggest that the likelihood, as has happened in countless other instances, that the Diamond Pack scavenged on the cow's carcass and wolves were drawn into prey on nearby vulnerable cattle. This was the 15th Mexican wolf shot by the government since the reintroduction began in 1998. Dozens of other wolves have been removed alive from the wild. The last Mexican wolf killed by the government for killing livestock was the mother of at least one pup in the Durango pack in New Mexico, and she was shot in July 2007 after that pack was purposely baited into killing livestock in order to prompt its destruction. After the Bush administration's U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service decided to kill that female, New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson persuaded the federal agency to reverse its order, but it was too late. Before it was convinced to stop the slaughter, the agency had killed and removed so many wolves that it caused a 24% drop in the Mexican wolf population. A growing body of research shows that killing wolves does nothing in the long run to reduce losses of livestock. Instead, stock can be protected through means accepted among ranchers in other regions who coexist with wolves, such as the Midwest. Effectively protecting cattle or sheep requires ranchers to remove livestock carcasses, enact seasonal calving to limit vulnerable calves' exposures to wolves, and to provide a consistent presence to scare wolves away. The government has required no such measures to prevent conflicts between Mexican wolves and livestock on public lands. The Center's Robinsons note that the government killed this wolf in secret and is hoping that her death won't cause a stir. Unfortunately, we know that persecuting wolves becomes disturbingly habitual for some wildlife managers, and that runs directly counter to what science says is best for recovering carnivores and reducing conflicts. To learn more, visit the center at biologicaldiversity.org.
More and more companies which have been meat producers are getting involved in plant-based alternatives to meat. One of the latest companies to do this is Hormel, the makers of Spam. During Hormel's recent third quarter analysis conference, the CEO, James Snee, revealed that the meat brand plans to focus on diversifying its non-meat holdings. Last May, Hormel acquired the nut butter brand Justin's to capitalize on the growing demand for non-meat protein. Snee said, "We've acquired some great non-meat protein items that have really rounded out our portfolio." Snee revealed that Hormel aims to make 15% of its net sales in 2020 from plant-based products developed during the last 5 years. Competing meat brand Tyson also made an investment in the vegan brand Beyond Meat earlier this year, after which its CEO Tom Hayes said he believes the future of protein is moving away from animals and towards plants.
The United States is rich in biodiversity, but the wildlife and ecosystems we share with Mexico are continually endangered by climate change and human encroachment on wildlife habitats. In January, the federal government announced that it would replace the San Diego border wall with a staggering 30-foot wall, potentially made of impermeable concrete, as well as building multiple sections of new prototype walls near the Otay Mesa border crossing. These projects are the first of the government's recently funded border wall construction. In an effort to evade compliance with vital environmental laws and regulations, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security invoked the waiver components of a 2005 immigration law known as the Real ID Act with regard to the San Diego wall construction, as well as an area of wall near Calexico, California. The agency asserts that this law provides it a waiver for compliance with numerous laws enacted to protect both our environment and endangered species, including the National Environmental Policy Act, the Endangered Species Act, and the Migratory Bird Conservation Act. But the scope of the Real IDs Act waiver provision was very limited, authorizing waiver for only very specific portions of the wall that were required to be expeditiously constructed within a few years of the passage of that 2005 law. The waiver of these decades-old environmental laws threatened the animals living in habitats that traverse the U.S.-Mexico border. To protect our ecosystems and the animals that call them home, the Animal Legal Defense Fund joined litigation brought by a coalition of wildlife protection groups that include Defenders of Wildlife, the Sierra Club, and the Center for Biological Diversity against the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. The lawsuit argues that the agency's attempt to waive the laws is illegal, and it is overreaching with its interpretation of the Act. These wall construction projects, which are now slated to begin as early as November, are the first attempt to use the Real ID Act of 2005 to waive environmental protection laws to allow construction of the border wall. The determination of the legality of the agency's effort to waive animal and environmental protection laws will have implications as this project proceeds across the more than 1,000 miles of the proposed border wall. Further, this decision will impact how the federal government is required to treat animals in the environment and future policy decisions. The border wall would divide animal families, interfere with breeding and migratory patterns, and potentially result in the extinction of many of the more than 100 endangered or threatened species that call the border area their home. To thrive, animals need access to the full range of their habitats. Barriers that isolate animals also lead to inbreeding, which decreases genetic diversity, and ultimately puts species at risk of extinction. Unimpeded migration is essential to gene flow. Additionally, many animals will suddenly find their natural migration routes impermissible. Species across the animal kingdom are genetically programmed to migrate to find more hospitable weather and food and/or to mate. Disrupting or permanently severing natural migration routes would be disastrous for countless species, some of whom travel thousands of miles every year. And just recently, the California Attorney General's office filed a similar lawsuit, and those suits will likely be merged. The federal government must respect its own laws and consider the impact that construction will have on our environment. On ACT Radio, we'll be keeping you posted on this fight to protect our native wildlife and keep their habitats safe.
Coming up next on ACT Radio, we'll be speaking with Victor and Carla Flores. Victor is the New Mexico Community Engagement and Events Coordinator for the national group Vegan Outreach. Victor and his spouse, Carla, co-founded the group Otero Veg in Alamogordo, New Mexico, and together they've organized community meals, fed vegan food to those in need, planned restaurant events, and have convinced some businesses to add vegan items to their menu. Our conversation with Victor and Carla is next on ACT Radio. Joining us now on ACT Radio, Victor and Carla Flores. Thanks for being with us on the show, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Victor and Carla, could we start out by having you tell our listeners how you guys became involved in veganism and animal issues? And maybe, Carla, let's start with you.
Well, I became vegan about 2 years ago after watching videos of factory farming and other animal agriculture practices. And I just knew instantly that I was going to be a vegan right there. I didn't know how, but I just knew I couldn't support this cruelty. And my whole family came on board with me, and that's pretty much how we got started into activism. And, of course, how we became vegan.
Victor, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, she pretty much summed it up. I mean, Carla is probably the biggest piece to all this for us. She came across these videos and sent them to me, and, you know, we kind of went along with it, and after a while, it was the only thing that made sense. We told our kids that they wanted to be vegan, it was up to them, and, of course, they went on board, no issues. It's been a whirlwind ever since. We haven't looked back.
Well, besides just being vegans, you've become activists, too. Tell us about your group, Otero Veg.
Otero Veg actually started originally, it was called Cloudcroft Vegan Society, and we started that, Carla came up with the idea just to start up a group, maybe for support, and we made a little web page, did something on Facebook, and I don't know if you guys are familiar with Cloud Cross, New Mexico. It's a pretty small town.
Yeah. It's amazing that there's a group of vegans there.
Yeah. I'm glad that you guys took a big challenge right away after becoming a vegan, is that you picked one of the smallest cities in New Mexico with probably very little vegan options and decided to change the culture there.
Yeah, we, I mean, of course, it's like any mountain town or pretty much rural New Mexico. It's all barbecue and hunting country. And yeah, luckily, you know, we're close to Alamogordo, New Mexico, which was 15 miles down the mountain, I believe, or 15 minutes. And of course, there's a Holloman Air Force Base there. And a lot of people in our group came from all walks, you know, from Cloudcroft. There's a little town in between there called High Rolls. All these people just kind of came out of the woodworks once we did a big event. We worked at Earth Day there in Alamogordo. They did a big, they do an event every year. And that's the first time we did an event, did a table, gave out information, gave out free samples of the Mandarin Orange Gardein chicken. And people were really amazed, and people were signing up on our email list. And that's how Cloud Crop Vegan Society kind of started growing. And then there was another group named Otero, Plant-Based Otero, of a friend of ours that she had started. And we kind of combined the two groups and changed it to Otero Veg. And that's where that came from. And basically it's there for support, do activities, you know, anybody in that area. That's pretty much Otero County, which is Alamogordo, Cloud Crop, Tularosa, all around that area.
How far are you from Alamogordo?
Well, we were in Cloudcroft. That was about maybe 15 minutes.
Oh, okay. I don't imagine there's too many places to shop for vegan things in Cloudcroft, right?
Well, just for anything, basically. Yeah, there's not. There's they opened a dollar store a couple of years ago, but that's pretty much it. But, yeah, pretty much in Alamogordo, we'd get all our groceries, any of the bigger events. I mean, we did a couple of events in Cloudcroft, but we found out, you know, of course, there's a bigger crowd in Alamogordo, so started doing a lot more things in Alamogordo. But Alamogordo really stepped it up. We worked with Albertsons there to start bringing in products. They're already bringing some products in on their own, but we really worked a lot with them to bring in stuff. Walmart, of course, is a staple in any little New Mexico town. So usually when we do events and talk to people about accessibility of vegan foods and you know, vegan meats or vegan products, Walmart is usually the place that we direct people to go to, because there's one almost in every town.
Yeah.
Well, also, you know, people always forget that you can get fruits and vegetables, beans and rice and pasta at any kind of grocery store there is. You know, we don't need to get the highly processed special vegan food. So I think that, you know, we should just make sure that we remind everybody that most grocery stores have a wide variety of plant-based foods that aren't labeled vegan, but they are vegan.
Beans and grains and nuts and seeds.
Pastas.
I'm curious, in all your, because you all do restaurant hopper type activities that we do here at the Vegetarian Society of El Paso and have gone to different restaurants. For our listeners who travel up to New Mexico for, you know, holidays and wintertime and skiing and all sorts of other reasons, are there places that you all recommend or restaurants that you recommend for great vegan options?
Well, Alamogordo, there's a place called Asian Garden that we worked with, did a couple of projects with them, and they did a full meal for us. And usually most of their stir-fry dishes can be veganized. I just haven't got back with them lately, so don't quote on me, but you know, you might want to check on the fish sauce, make sure that's still a thing that doesn't have to be included in your dish. Their tofu is amazing, of course. There's a place in Alamogordo called Boba Tea. Also, they do coconut milk if you want your boba tea. They do coconut smoothies and a couple other options. Ridoso has a place called Simple Sugars that all their baked goods are vegan, and so they have cupcakes, things like that. They are also doing some of the soft serve yogurts. They have one in coconut milk, and of course, they have like the sorbets. But that's in this mountain area. But I'm not sure if you guys are aware that we moved closer to Albuquerque. Did you guys know that?
Yeah, we did.
So up here in Albuquerque, Albuquerque is pretty much blowing up with a lot of stuff. Of course, you got Thai Vegan, which is a Thai restaurant that is 100% vegan. You got Annapurna's, which is an Indian.
I ate there a couple of years ago when I was up at Albuquerque Veg Fest.
Nice.
I understand. You went to that the last Veg Fest they had there?
We did. We were actually at both of them. That first one we went to, we were I think just starting to get involved with vegan outreach, and we tabled for them. And then this last one, of course, we tabled again, and then Carla also tabled for PETA. And so that was a lot of fun, got a lot of info out, so it was great.
Did the crowd size grow from the first to the second Veg Fest there?
Yeah, it seemed like it was steady. I mean, it felt like it was similar. I mean, so I don't know, we're so busy running around because we're doing the vegan outreach table, Carla's doing the PETA table, but we weren't just stuck there. We're also doing the food samples. We've sampled out some barbecue sausage, and our girls, were doing another table for the kids, and so it was crazy. So I don't know. I talked to so many people. It's kind of wild. They felt like I was busier this time, but again, I think we're just more active, but, you know.
A couple of months ago, at the beginning of August, I ran into Victor at the National Annual Animal Rights Conference put on by the Farm Animal Rights Movement. Were you tabling there or just being a visitor?
Yeah, no. Me and Carla did attend just as visitors. We took in advantage of all the talks and really just because you always have to be learning, I think. I mean,
And it's a great motivation. It's inspiring to go to. That was my 13th conference.
Wow.
What was your favorite part of the conference?
I think I liked, of course, I think it's super impressive for, people, because there's a lot of people attending there just starting activism and getting involved. But the talks, the workshops, I mean, they're just so impressive. You know, a lot of people have been in the movement, kind of like yourself, that have been doing it for so long, and presenting talks and using techniques and some of the things that we might not imagine that might be handy for an activist to use. But, you know, there's just so many talks I can just point out one, but they're all great.
My favorite part was the virtual reality. I put on the goggles and watched a virtual reality video about an open rescue at a chicken factory farm. It was incredible. That was my first experience with virtual reality.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many new tools of technology coming out that those virtual reality videos are very impressive, very impactful, and it just puts you in that spot, you know. And I think the ones we show is from an organization called Animal Equality, and they kind of partnered up with Vegan Outreach to work together and get these videos out there. So they send us the equipment, and we use those often. And we have one for pigs, one for chickens, and they have a new one for dairy. And I think the dairy one's really, I mean, they're all impactful, but the dairy one's really making people think about it. And, of course, you know, we all know dairy's on the way out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank goodness. I think sales of milk have dropped 30% in the last 5 years.
Yeah. It's crazy how we, you know, the government, just a lot of people don't know, you know, I think it was last year, $34 million to bail them out at the end of the year to buy their surplus.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's sad because all that surplus, you know, where does it go? It goes to lower income communities, projects. They just throw it out there and give it to people.
Yeah, and school lunch programs.
Well, Victor and Carla, I'm curious, you know, when you all made the transition to a plant-based diet, you know, there's a lot of great animal protection organizations, and Vegan Outreach is one that, you know, tops on my list just because of the amount of impact that they have, especially at college campuses. I'm curious, what inspired you all to choose to really dive in headfirst and really help them out the way you have been?
I think, like I said, the beginning of all this was with Carla, and she really, when we first went vegan, you know, it was good, and I think she wanted to get more involved. And actually, I mean, the El Paso Vegetarian Society had a lot to do with it because we got an email, because we're members, and I remember Lori Stoltz, who works with Vegan Outreach, was coming to El Paso to leaflet. And I think, I'm not sure if it was Suki or Liz that sent out the email, it might have been Liz, but if anybody wanted to host her, and of course, my mother-in-law lives in El Paso, so Carla was like, yeah, we'll definitely host her, and Carla set that up, and she, you know, became friends with her, we started talking to her, and she heard of our stuff that we were doing with the Taro Veg, and, you know, after a while, she shared it with people at Vegan Outreach, and, you know, Carla started leafleting with her and doing things like that. So, you know, we just got involved little by little.
And so the Vegetarian Society of El Paso is responsible for the veganization of New Mexico. That's great news. The ripple effect.
Yeah.
That's a quote we're going to take out of it, at least.
So I'm kind of interested in learning about how your family made the transition, because you said that you had some children, and so I don't know how old they are, but sometimes kids have a lot of pressure from classmates, and they're invited to birthday parties and pizza things, and so how did your family help your kids transition to the vegan lifestyle?
Like I said, when we found out about factory farming and all that that Carla came across, it's, you know, it's very impactful for us. And, of course, you know, the kids saw some of it, and I mean, not the most graphic stuff, but I think for the kids in our own family, inside our household, it was really simple. Now, regarding my parents or my mother-in-law, there wasn't really too much resistance. I think we had it really easy, maybe compared to other people. So them going vegan and you know, any questions about nutrition or them growing up and being strong, we already had researched all that, you know, because even when we thought we were going to go vegan, we thought, well, what about the kids? Don't they need milk for their bones? Don't they need meat to be strong? I mean, we're good because we're already old, but, you know, the kids need that. So we did a lot of research on nutrition, and, you know, obviously there's no issue there. So, you know, we were able to answer our family members' questions or any doubts they might have, and it really wasn't a struggle for us personally. I mean, I can see how some families might struggle, and maybe a lot do because of the environment they're in, but for us, I think that's why we're involved in activism, because the veganism part, the eating part, was really a breeze.
Yeah, no, I was just kind of curious about the kids when they went to school, because I know that peer pressure can be pretty rough on kids, especially in a small town like where they were. But it sounds like they didn't have much of a trouble at all.
Yeah, I think, you know, they're homeschooled now, which is, you know, just because of where we live. But when they're going to Cloudcroft, I think none of my children really struggled, because a lot of them were pretty... They informed themselves also and were able to respond and handle things, I guess. But one of my daughters, probably the most outspoken one, and she'll tell you how it is. You know, you know, you're eating a dead animal. Yes, you are. You know, this and that. And maybe I remember there's one example that she said, there's a little boy that he liked to hunt. And I think it became an issue where my daughter replied, well, how about if I kill you if you're killing the animals, you know? And we got a call from the teacher, you know, because my daughter was saying she might kill somebody. But no, it was taken out of context, I think. But, you know, little things like that pop up. And then, you know, she never let herself, you know, be taken advantage. She would really tell how it is. And for a while, it got to a point where they were thinking that it went both ways. So they were telling Giovanna that she couldn't be telling students that they shouldn't eat meat because it did this, and that they shouldn't be telling her either jokes and stuff like that. So it was kind of silly, but eventually we were able to talk to the principal, and Giovanna was a little afraid to even speak up anymore because they're kind of siding with other students. And the principal apologized to her and told her that, you know, there was no worries, that she shouldn't be worried about who she is and what she stands for. But again, it's this culture, and I think, you know, people don't get it and people don't understand it sometimes, and they try to ridicule it or make fun of it or try to justify their actions, I think, right, by other means. Yep. But, you know, that was a little squabble we had, but that was about it. And that was towards the beginning of our journey, and I don't think it really has been an issue since.
Well, it seems like a real important part is, as you said, having your children be able to have their informed opinion ready to speak about. Because I think, you know, we've talked about it on the show quite a bit about how we're really born with compassion, and, you know, as human beings, that's how we're programmed. And so it's over time that we sort of become desensitized to the issues and the feelings of other beings and that sort of thing. So I think having the knowledge and having the language ready to go, I'm sure, helps kids a lot.
Yeah, that's true. I think even with adults too.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have to really inform ourselves and just be ready for anything that you know, kind of gets kind of thrown at us. And yeah, I think learning and educating yourself and reading as much as you can, and, you know, touching the topic of nutrition, the environmental impact, and, of course, the animals and their suffering and the cruelty that goes on with them is just super important.
Yeah, and reading the vegan outreach literature is certainly a great way to be informed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why don't you tell our listeners where they can find the vegan outreach literature and some of the programs that you guys have?
Sure. Well, you know, for a lot of people that aren't aware, I know Tom touched it lightly, that vegan outreach is known. They started by going to universities and colleges for passing out literature. And I know Jack Norris, our founding member and executive director now, they started with black and white copies and, you know, eventually upgraded to color, and they got some donations, and it's been nonstop since then. But the reason they go to colleges and universities is because that's where most open-minded people are. You got a freshman coming into college, making his own choices, buying his own food, paying for his own gas, his own rent, and they're more open to really choosing right from the beginning what they're going to eat and what they're going to support. So that's why they go to colleges and universities, and that's what Vegan Outreach is known for. If you want literature to kind of pass out on your own and do things like that, you can go to veganoutreach.org, look for literature, and you can order it. And, you know, there's different programs where, you know, we'll charge for the literature, because obviously the literature is not free, but you can request a certain amount to give out. If you can't afford it, we can work with you and figure something else out, maybe just to cover the shipping costs. And then, again, even then, if you can't afford it, we could still figure something out just to get the literature out there, because that's ultimately our goal. Our goal is not really to make money off the literature, which we definitely don't, but, you know, they can go there. There's another big program that I think is super important. It's called the Vegan Mentor Program. You can go to the website, veganoutreach.org. Look for the Vegan Mentor Program. You could sign up as a mentor or as a mentee. And we always refer people there to become mentees, because we're always talking to people that are obviously non-vegan. And if they need help shopping in their region, it'll pair you up with any other vegans that are wherever you live at, close to you at least. And you answer a few questions. If you want to be a mentor, you know, how old are you? Do you have family? Do you have children? How long have you been vegan, and so on and so on. And it pairs you up. It's really a neat system, because it'll pair you up with somebody that's similar. Like for us, we'll get people, like hits from people. I get people from Tornillo, there in El Paso, people in El Paso, Las Cruces. They pair us with people that have family, because they obviously know we have family. And we've had examples of people like, well, I want to be vegan, like the mother's telling us, but my children don't want to help, or my husband really is not interested. What can I feed them to really convince them? Things like that. So the Vegan Mentor Program is super important. If you guys are all vegan, you need to definitely join and become a mentor. If you're not, definitely become a mentee, and they'll help you along. If you're at Walmart, you don't know what to buy, you can ask, and they'll help you out. Right? Yeah. The mentor program is super important, and I think everything that Vegan Outreach is doing is great, and what we're doing now is working with local organizations, not necessarily that are vegan, but we're working on community projects, community meals, community presentations, and I think it's important that we work with long-established organizations that have already been there, and they have the credentials to really get you in the door, and that's what we're doing.
We've been talking with Victor and Carla Flores, who work with Vegan Outreach in New Mexico. And they're also the founders of the group Otero Veg. Thanks for being on our show, guys.
Thanks for having us.
If you'd like to learn more about a vegetarian diet or a vegan lifestyle, you can go to thesep.org, the Vegetarian Society of El Paso.
And if you'd like to listen to past shows of ACT Radio, you'll find them by going to ktep.org. Just click the Listen to Past Shows button. Until next time, I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
I'm Liz Walsh. For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.